Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The season is nearly upon us. I hope you'll join us at Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. Nothing too fancy on this episode. Just me hanging out with my buddy Mike Caulfield, who just happens to have been a real life race strategy person at Haas and Mercedes. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good to be back on. Good to see you as well.
Yeah, it's good to have you back on. I almost can't believe that someone that was operating at your level in an F1 team will spare the time to come and speak to us in the shed. I normally only get to speak to the Derricks of the teams, but you're like a named playable character.
Yeah, to some people. I don't know. I try to keep downplay my accomplishments or lack of there.
But you've been in the heart of, you know, an F1 team during the testing part of the season, which is really why I wanted to come here and kind of get you on and interrogate you, because in our testing review, we played the game of, you know, trying to put ourselves in the position of the other teams and trying to guess, make definitive conclusions from testing. And we came up with a definitive order. We somewhat ruined 2024 for people because we've solved it. Do the teams do the same thing as we're doing, trying to analyse where they are in the order, or do they just concentrate on what they're doing?
No, 100%. All the teams will try and rank it. I mean, there's obviously that caveat of the unknowns, and everyone takes that into early with a little pinch of salt. And it's also changed a little bit now where you have the test, it's only a 3-day test, yeah, in Bahrain, literally a week before the season starts. So you've got much less data to work on. And also it's that, well, we're going to find out the answer in a week's time anyway. So it's not as, people aren't as kind of impatient for it. Whereas before you used to do 8 days in Barcelona and then it would be 3 weeks before you're getting off to Melbourne. So in that time, you'd be literally scraping over all the data and putting something together. So you have a kind of good idea of your plan going into Melbourne, because again, totally different circuit to Barcelona in the winter. It was trying to kind of figure out where your strengths and weaknesses, how they kind of cross-pollinated across to the kind of actual season and actual conditions would go. Whereas, yeah, Bahrain now, you're literally on the same track a week later. I think it's more now kind of pushed towards almost like glorified kind of, well, it is practice. It's just kind of tuning in, right, what have we bought, get the car tuned in. And then if you're having a successful testing program, you're then starting to kind of just start setting your car up for the next week, really.
So that would be my first question is, because the first race is on this same track, how tempting is it to over-focus on the Bahrain Grand Prix race one? Because you don't want to just test for one track, do you?
No, but at the same time, you have to test for what you've got, and you shouldn't be trying to kind of alter what the track conditions. That was the beauty about Barcelona was, really, but he obviously was basically three separate tracks in the sense of your first part of the track was that kind of high speed, long demanding corners. Second part was a bit more kind of medium speed. And then the last bit was slow speed on the old layout anyway. So you kind of had to kind of got a good impression of what your car could and couldn't do. The only downside of Barcelona used to be was, but it was in winter, but it was in conditions you were never going to run in the whole season. So like the tire degradations and everything like that were never kind of realistic in terms of what you'd kind of see. So a lot of the analysis you used to have to do was kind of trying to look at what previous years was and how did it translate in the race? And then how did that translate into the kind of other kind of races coming up? So that was, it used to be a lot of work. The other thing that's changed as much is that like Pirelli brought the same tires this year as they had last year as well. So it's not going into testing with that kind of brand new, right? What the compound's doing, how's that going to change? So there's less focus on that, which is another, would have been a test item there, would be to try and figure out what the tires are doing. Obviously that's pretty much known now. So you're then looking at, right, what changes have we made on the car? How have they affected? You've obviously got a lot of data from last year in terms of Bahrain testing. Does development throughout the season though, so you can't always do that kind of straight compare to what we're seeing in last year's testing and race. So teams generally do focus on kind of they still have the run programs. They've got to test out all the systems. It's a brand new chassis, it's a brand new build installation. So you've got to make sure there's no kind of gremlins in there and everything's fitting as it should do. There's nothing kind of overheating problems or et cetera, et cetera. So that kind of still has to go through all that kind of process. But end of the day, you still look at the timesheets with a pinch of salt and kind of try and figure out, right, what are people doing? Where do we stand? How are we going to plan next week? And where do we think we're going to be competing with? And you start having that one eye on the actual season and the race and then trying to figure out, right, what we're going to do about it.
So you're obviously an expert in tyre wear. Like, you must be as a strategist. And so Matt is going to be very, very jealous that he couldn't make it because of this line of questioning here. So, you know, there were reports that Max Verstappen exhibited basically no tyre wear. There were reports that Ferrari have now put to bed some of their tyre wear issues. But in testing, I mean, how much can you really tell? So obviously Red Bull don't have zero tyre wear. Is that more of an indication that the drivers are not leaning on it as much? And in your experience, do the drivers go for it in testing with what they're provided with?
In any case, they tend to. It's like most teams will do a race simulation. So you're literally doing your 57-lap race and they're going out full fuel loads and going. And what you actually find in that testing scenario when they go into these race sims, that drivers often, all right, they're not racing anyone, but also that same concept applies. They're not racing anyone, so they don't have that same kind of process. Like, I've got to manage here, got to manage there. So you'll go into it with a kind of plan saying, we still need to look after the tyres. Can you try and do this with them? And then you kind of monitor it and you have that kind of feedback and loop. And you'll actually notice as well throughout the day, before you get to that race sim, a lot of people do like high fuel runs. So it might not be a full start fuel load, but it's quite a high fuel run. And they'll do different approaches to it. So they're like kind of, they'll be looking at doing like a 12-lap run maybe, and they'll start off full push in and just see what the tyres do. And then they'll start off like, right, let's try to do a bit of management. How does this affect the degradation? And then, but ultimately you're looking for that kind of ultimate kind of stint time. So it's the area under the graph really. So often you find that some people can start off slow on the tyres. The degradation's much better, but actually the crossover of it comes really late on the stint. But actually it was still quicker to gun out, have a higher degradation rate, but you've pushed.
Oh, right. When you say crossover, do you mean the point at which you're starting to lose lap time? Because
So for example, you can go out and you start and your first laps are 1:35, and 12 lap later you're doing 1:38, 1:39 currently. So it's 4 seconds a deg on it. But ultimately you might go out and start doing a 1:38 to start with and end doing a 1:39. But you've never made that time you've lost at the beginning and the stint back up to kind of recover it. So you've overmanaged to an extent, and you're actually more beneficial to have had a quicker stint at the beginning and a bit more degradation. Coming back from it is like, this is where testing isn't as real as the races, where you don't have to worry about being overtaken or something, where you've got that kind of tire offset. So it's not as kind of realistic in that respect, where yes, all right, I can go quicker over this stint, but if I'm destroying the tyres, I've also got a chance of being overtaken and that in a real life situation. So it's usually a middle ground between the two is where people kind of settle on.
It's yeah, because I think we tend to, as viewers, tend to think of it as linear. Like you've got tyres now at the beginning of the stint and then you have less as you go through. Whereas really, it's not too dissimilar to running a 5K. And do you go out like a rabbit out of a trap or do you manage? But, you know, I found myself in those 5Ks where you're going very gentle to start with and trying to do decreasing splits as you go. But then you've overdone it and suddenly the 25 minute mark has overtaken you and you're like, oh, he's miles ahead now. So some drivers will pace themselves differently through a stint. So you would have been at Mercedes observing Hamilton and Rosberg close at hand. And one of the things I thought in 2015, say in particular, that Hamilton used to not mind so much about qualifying, but when it came to the race, towards the end of the first stint, he always seemed to have more tyres than Nico Rosberg. And just wondering how much of that is just because he was kinder on the tyres, or how much of that is he was deliberately going, right, I'm saving it for halfway through the stint, as opposed to Rosberg going, go, go, go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's quite a possibility of that. Like often in back then as well, is that usually when you're going into a strategy of a race, you'll tell the drivers kind of, especially in that day when it was still like two stop races were kind of the norm at that point. So your first stop lap would be maybe lap 15, lap 16. And you go in a strategy meeting in the morning, you'd be like, we have to reach at least lap 13. We can't go any earlier than that. It's really detrimental to our race if we go earlier than that. And ideally we reach 16. And if we can extend it, even better. So the drivers obviously in that mindset go, okay, we know what the pros and cons of doing this is. And then some drivers just are better than others in terms of managing that kind of time. And as the concepts, like you said, with the 5K aspects of it is with Pirelli tires as well, they've changed a little bit throughout the year, but they're very much as well as if you hit them very early on, you then can't recover. No matter how much their management you do later, they just don't recover. If you've taken that kind of edge out of it and that beginning bit, that's it. You'll struggle to ever bring it back. They're not as bad as they used to be now, but it's still very much the same concept. So if you go like steaming out the pits and try and do a fastest lap by 2 seconds on that one, unless you drop off instantly after that, so you're like 2 seconds quicker and then you're driving 4 seconds off the pace, it'll just kind of spiral.
I think Hamilton seems to be particularly decent. That seems to be a particular strength of his. But if you look at like George Russell this year in Interlagos, I think it seems to be a great example of it where he was able to go, hey, you know, I've got tons of pace here. Why is he going so slow? And then you saw him like drop like a balloon. And you go, well, some drivers just seem to instinctively have that over other drivers. So with Piastri and Norris, they seem similar pace on a Saturday. And then on Sunday, Norris has got a clear advantage. And it was a comment from Matt who went, yeah, if Piastri can just sort out the bit with the tyre wear, he'll be as fast as Norris. And you go, well, is it as simple as that? Is that not quite fundamental?
It is as simple, actually, but it's not simple to do. Because it's when, like, this management can literally be tense. It's kind of that case. And it's all about doing it in the right places. And I've known some drivers, they'll just drive, you'll say, right, we've got to manage the tyres. And they end up, they just drive 3.5-4 seconds slower. And you're just like, it's not management, but it's not really management. You're just driving slow. Whereas like the experts of it can like manage the tire, and then all the teams are monitoring like the tire work, the tire energy is going into it. And you can like, maybe if you do it correctly, like in terms of your turning, your braking, your exit, and in certain parts of the circuit, you can do quite a lot of energy and maybe only driving like half a second a lap slower, but you're saving a huge amount of energy going into the tyres. And that's something that can be learned. And that's somewhere like Piastri, obviously it's his first season last year. We'll probably just be studying that and going, right, what's Lando doing different to me? And you can just, driving styles come into it. But again, you have to modify your driving styles a little bit if you're in a high degradation race. And I kind of feel he'll improve because these cars are difficult to drive in terms of, they're so heavy. They're so kind of got so much inertia in them. But you're coming in, your first race, you're trying to race, you're trying to learn it all to start with. And then I think that next step. So I think he'll take a step improvement this year. That being said, though, from testing this week, neither of them looked particularly good in terms of degradation on that car.
Here we go. Now we're back into it. I want the Caulfield, you know, detective work. And in the live patron chat, they're saying, can you ask Mike if we can believe anyone who says they have definitive conclusions from testing? Because I definitely did that. I was like, this is... But I mostly went off of what the teams were saying. And, you know, most of the people talking to the camera are straight shooters. So James Allison looked very, very happy, thinks he's above Ferrari. Lando Norris looked like he was chewing wasps. Alonso and Stroll looked like they'd been forced to go and speak to the cameras. So, you know, you look at that kind of running order and go, wow, okay, that's a reasonable starting point. Because as Matt pointed out, you know, these guys aren't great actors, as it were. But is there any benefit really to hiding your pace? Because there's a lot of chat of hiding your pace. Why would a team bother hiding their pace?
You wouldn't. It's always been. It's like it's always one where it's always made me laugh the whole time you've been in it. I mean, I think there's a case in the past, and I'll go back to kind of what you say. When it used to be like there used to be 3 weeks of testing, and then there used to be a bit of a gap before the season. So it was always that kind of worry that if you showed too much, people might try and figure out what you're doing, and then make the development going into it to kind of make those jumps going into the season. Whereas if you kind of maybe give someone like a bit of false hope, but they don't then do the work going into it, and you go, actually, dude, we were down a bit. They thought they were a bit closer than they were. Whereas now when you've only got a week between it, your development plans are pretty much planned up until about June now anyway. There's no real benefit on it.
Yeah, they're not going to suddenly change and go, oh, no, we're going to copy that Red Bull air vent. Yeah.
So I think in the past, there was a little bit of gamesmanship just to kind of, just to keep things a bit unknown. But even then, like when people go, the sandbagging, he's like, well, not like, I remember when I, because obviously I worked at Mercedes when they're quick, and it was like, the sandbagging, it's like, no, literally, a lot of it was like, right, we've got to test the engine. So we weren't allowed to run them full power mode for the first kind of 6 days of testing or something, and then gradually increased it. And then you'd run it on a run where you're trying to do an aero performance run, and you wouldn't do it when you're doing a qualifying run because, again, it's a totally different engine mode to that, so you're not quite showing it. And then, say, like places like Bahrain, you go, well, they haven't done a C5 tyre run. It's like, yeah, but what's the point? Because we don't run the C5s at Bahrain. So
too soft, yeah.
It's totally irrelevant. And so we wouldn't show it that. So it's not as such as like deliberately hiding and deliberately sandbagging. You're just trying to do your program to get your data. And then a lot of it comes from, oh, we've got data from last year and we've got data from this year. And the best way to compare it is by doing something similar rather than doing something totally different to last year and then making it all the comparisons and the analysis are much harder to try and figure out.
So it's not that they're doing certain things because they're trying to hide stuff, but the program may not necessarily show the quickest lap time. So, yeah. For example, Mercedes 20, you know, that post-turbo hybrid era early on, they would go out in testing and it would seem like they would have the hard tire nearly constantly, be down on engine mode, run heavy. And that just seems to be the way they do things. So maybe not to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, but that's just, I guess that's how they run. But I don't want to lose all hope that there's a bit more Mercedes pace to come.
Oh, yeah. And I think even today is like, I think there probably is more to come. I'd be very surprised if they were in a proper engine mode this last week. And if they did, it was probably on a lap which was totally irrelevant as such, or like midday sun on a C2 tire or something when they were doing an 8-lap run. So it's like, and that'll just be, again, it's to test out the system. So like, there's no point, there's nothing to be gained by going and doing a slam dunk lap. You're not trying to gain sponsors, you're not trying to gain anything like that. It's what it is.
Like Williams, I think it was 2014 and they didn't have the martini thing yet, so I think that there was 2 weeks of testing, and then the week one they popped up in P2 and you go, what, that's, have they really got something? To be fair, they did have a reasonable season that year, but then they secured the martini sponsorship and then do sort of more normal, more sensible runs. But then towards the end of testing, say you had the stake F1 kick Sauber team with Zhou Guanyu, pop up in like P3. Like what circumstances are they around that? You must occasionally get a team going, do you know what, we could do with just being up the scoreboard a bit.
I think there is, and I think there's more benefit for your teams, like your Alpha, Sauber, that's how I'm calling them, Sauber, I don't care. But your Saubers and your Toro Rossos and your Minardis, to kind of, there's more for them to say, right, let's see what this car's performance is. It gives people in the team a bit of a kick, a bit of a jump, because you're not going to be competing for wins and podiums for the rest of the season. And the people in the team know it's not realistic. We're like, you know, if you probably, but like Haas last year in testing got the fastest lap on, I think, 2 days out of the three or something. And everyone in the team knew it wasn't, they weren't the fastest team, but it just gives everyone that little jump and just go, see, we're not, like, it's not disastrous, because you've still got to be reasonable to kind of put that time in. You know, everyone else isn't running what you're particularly running, but it's just sometimes that kind of morale booster. And also sometimes you're just going to go, right, okay, you might have done a successful test program. You've ticked off all your development list as well. And you get to that last day and you go, okay, we've got this set of tires left. We haven't got anything left. We need to actually test. Okay, let's drop the fuel load. Let's turn the engine up a bit, put these tires on, see what you do, and go for it. And it's like,
I always say, like, to people on a Friday as well, when you're trying to, if you're trying to tease something out of the lap times, it's a bit of a fool's errand, but every now and then you'll get a run like that from Zhou Guanyu, and then you go, okay, that really shows you how irrelevant the lap times are. So, you know, wet finger in the air, what's the lap time difference between having a soft tire, low fuel engine mode turned up to having a heavier fuel load, harder tire, and engine on a low mode? You know, what sort of swing are we talking with lap times? Like, just how irrelevant are the lap times we see, basically?
Oh, I mean, there's not just that. So there was a few things. There's like getting the track conditions perfect. So obviously, as the track gets cooler, that'll help it. It's windy in Bahrain as well, so you can actually like time it. And there was one point, I think it was on the second day, where literally 20 minutes before the end of the day, the wind suddenly went up and there was a few cars on like a race sim, and like all four cars on track, lap time just jumped up by about half a second. And because the wind had just picked up and like, and just, they made them
blowing them down the straight.
So you can potentially just even look into that, and you suddenly go out and you're like, oh, suddenly I'm a second quicker. And it's like, but I think just based on what you said in terms of tires, fuel, engine mode, I mean, you'll be looking at 2 seconds there probably, at least in that respect. I mean, it can vary depending on what tires you're going to, what fuel load you're going to. But for example, I mean, that Joe lap, he was probably on 15 kilos. I don't know. Probably won't be fully low qualifying fuel, but lowish. Whereas your Verstappen, I doubt he'll have dropped below 40. If not, I think he's probably going to be 50, 60.
What's the maximum? 100?
I mean, they can stick about 125 in the car now. So, yeah, it's... these cars as well will be probably overweight, because they'll have a lot of logging equipment on them as well. So, again, it depends on that. So, effective fuel loads for people in the racing. So your race start fuel load's 110 kilos, give or take, depending on the fuel consumption. I think most people's race sims here will be probably starting about 120, 125 kilos. And that's usually where you can tell what people's actual pace is when you look at the race sims, because there's not much more you can take. You can turn the engine down a little bit, but you don't want to be too slow. And then your tyres are going to be what the tyres are going to be in the race, because otherwise you'll struggle to race him, because if you go too soft, they'll degrade. And then, yeah, and then everything at engine mode, it's going to be similar, maybe a little bit more to come, but similar. So I think that's always your best analysis. But still, there'll still be a variance probably of still 15, 20 kilos between some teams doing the fuel loads and that.
Look, you're not some foolish podcaster making wild guesses and speculation, but I invite you to wade on in to the pool of definitive conclusions. Now, there's a couple of things here. A, you're an expert. You've literally made decisions for race cars during the race and made strategy calls in the pinnacle of motorsport. And also, like, you're a very connected gentleman indeed, as much as you downplay that. So, What's your vibe? What's your running order? What's your top five, Mike?
Top five.
Who's that texting you? Is that one of the teams now saying, don't tell them? Don't tell how much sandbagging Mercedes is doing.
Just double checked. No, it's fine.
It's not James Allison. No. Okay. Yeah. Go on. What's your top five?
I'm going to be really, but it's obviously going to be difficult. So it's Red Bull looks quick. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they're still a step above everyone else. There's a couple of conversations out with people at Paddock, and they just look at Max more so than Checo. But obviously he seems to still just find somehow half a second out of that car compared to Checo. But I spoke to a couple of people on the pit lane, and they were just like, we really don't know what they're doing in terms of, not in a bad way, but just like, it's just impressive in terms of what they're doing in that sense with Max. So I'd probably say let's go drivers. Max first.
Yep.
Then a step to Checo. And I'd say probably, I think the battle for like that next group looks as it was last year, really. I'd be surprised if like Merck, Ferrari, I can't pick which way around they are because I don't know enough.
Yeah, a lot of people are struggling with that.
But I feel Merck might have a slight edge on it race pace, but Ferrari might have that little bit of an edge on qualifying. But then you can't tell just based off testing. And
this is wild speculation, Mike. Look, you've come down to our level here. This is your fault. So just speak with confidence. You haven't earned authority, for goodness sake.
Yeah. I think Merck are happy with the progress they've made, but I think I don't think they're going to be challenging Red Bull. That is the minor thing. But yeah, and then McLaren, I think a little bit back from those two, just because, again, like I said, their degradation didn't look great in the race sims. McLaren's, yeah. So it kind of looks like, yeah, the race trim might not be fantastic. But this is when going back over historic things, but McLaren. I know last season they didn't start the season well with the car, but last year in Bahrain they struggled. The season before in Bahrain they struggled. They always seem to struggle in Bahrain. So potentially it's a circuit specific. Bahrain doesn't quite suit their car, and it still hasn't quite suited their car, even though they made improvements to it. It's going fine.
Okay, so, well, why?
Is it really? I need to really dig into like their actual data and stuff on that. It's just the nature of the corners of it is just obviously the track surface at Bahrain is quite an aggressive one. So that kind of has that extra effect on the degradation. It's potentially just like a suspension setting. I don't know. I honestly, it's a struggle to figure out why exactly they'd struggle on it and then come good. But it is a pattern over the last few years, but Bahrain just doesn't quite suit them. And it might be just for like, there's a lot of high speed in Bahrain. And it might be just that they're just lacking a little bit in those high speed corners with the addition of the high degradation, which the circuit usually brings because of that kind of quite aggressive track surface.
Well, certainly even last season, you could see that McLaren were better off on the low deg circuits. That seemed to be the case there. And then where Mercedes were better on the higher degradation circuits compared to those guys, but then Mercedes would end up P9, P11 in qualifying and then just be stuck and not be able to use that better tyre performance.
Yeah, I mean, and usually when that indicates that you're struggling to get, or you're very kind on your tyres, basically, and you struggle to get your tyres in your window for that qualifying one lap, but you're able to kind of look after them in a race. So that instance... Whereas, yeah, like you say, McLaren potentially just that little bit hard on the tyres, and it could just be that kind of criteria, but it's just that kind of suspension geometry just adds that little bit more kind of input in those high speed corners. And then, yeah, somewhere like Bahrain, where it's always high degradation anyway, they just struggle to control it. And the only way of controlling it is by going a bit slower. So it'll be interesting. And again, it's speculation in terms of they might have been trying something. They might have just been saying, right, go out and do these with no management. We want to try and get some detail on this to try and work
out the problem.
And then actually we know how to deal with it in a race situation, but we want to just try and pick up some data about driving in this way. So it could be that they come once they get to next week and they've studied it and go, right, we've looked at how they're driving it, we've looked at how they're driving it, they've got good profiles, we just need to do this, and they'll be much better next week. Oh, this weekend, sorry.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I want to be nosy. So as the, what was your position at Haas? Were you the top strategist at Haas? Yeah. So you were like the main dude on the pit wall making those calls for both drivers?
Yes. Yeah.
But you do not have like a lieutenant's assigned to each driver?
I mean, the way we worked, we were at Haas, we're a much smaller group than some of the other teams. And every team kind of works in a little bit of a different kind of method. But yeah, we'd work for, we'd control both cars, and we'd have like rules of engagement to kind of like not favor one over the other. And like, obviously the lead car would have the priority, and then we're trying to obviously get the strategy to, depending on the positions between them, to kind of filter out. And generally what we worked with, we'll have the guys who are kind of like working for me would like be monitoring different things. So be monitoring the competitors, monitoring what the degradation's doing, monitoring kind of who our closest competitors are to make sure we didn't miss anything. So like potentially I might take a kind of an eye on the lead car and have someone looking at the second car if they were a little bit separate. If they were close together, it was quite easy to kind of follow what was going on. But say potentially we had one car up in the top 10 and one car down in 17, for example, then it's a bit difficult to monitor both race situations in that case. Yeah.
You're always very polite to not say Grosjean. That's the takeaway. I can say that. I know you can't. But I'm curious, kind of before the race, you know, it's a long weekend and really you come to life during the race. But how involved do you get with the guys, with the mechanics? How interested are you in the tech side of the car? I mean, I guess you don't have to, but did you find yourself, you know, chatting with, you know, Derek on the suspension bay?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, one thing that's like which brings the strategist kind of close with the mechanics for a start is that usually the strategists are often in charge of kind of pit stop stuff and like and looking at it, because like the pit stops are a big strategy element. So part of the kind of work which a lot of the strategy groups do is looking at the analysis of the pit stops, so going over all the pit stop practices, looking at kind of each of the corners. So you then get to work with the mechanics then to kind of, you chat with them and work with them to try and like go over stuff and figure out what's going on there. So while you might not be like overall in charge of the pit stop itself, in terms of that's usually goes down to the kind of either the team manager or the chief mechanic, but you'll like kind of have your say to kind of like, right, we'll do the kind of techie engineering side of things and look at kind of what the analysis is going on of each corner and breaking it down with the kind of human performance coaches and trying to figure out what's best and make sure you've got everybody in the correct positions. And yeah, and then you just go and chat to them and get their feedback and try and like figure out what we can do to help them. And yeah,
I feel for those guys, because honestly, it's like a penalty shootout every single pit stop for every single one of those mechanics.
It's awful. It's like, some guys like it, but a lot of guys, I mean, because obviously you're limited on personnel, so you can't, it's not like NASCAR where they just bring in literally people to do the pit stops. These guys, their day job is building the cars and doing everything else. And then you have to pick out you have to pick out, what was it, for basically 16 people out of that to then do these bits on, which doesn't leave many left over. So like, there's not many people sat in the sidelines, and so like, if someone really doesn't want to do it, you kind of say, well, you have to sometimes, because you're only a couple of injuries away from like saying like, you're kind of, we need people on. And that was the hardest thing about it, is kind of, a lot of the guys wanted to do it, but they also knew that it was very much a very low reward kind of,
yeah, high risk.
Yeah,
and also also some of those positions, like front jack guys, get flung all the time. Again, that was Grosjean as well. We hit a front jack guy quite hard.
I think most drivers in the hit a front jack man at some point.
Yeah, and you just go, right, you're on front jack today, Derek. Oh, are you? No, please. I've got babies. You go, how do you nominate who goes where?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of kind of, first off, it's like you do look for who's interested in it. There's like, there's anything positions people want to do. And then you look at like the skill, like, because obviously the tires now are huge, so like, mm-hmm. the rear kind of a rear tire on man, for example, is having to swing his huge one. So he's got to be, you can't have someone who's short in the arm, for example. He's just going to struggle to get it on in that one. So you've got to try and kind of fit people to like their best positions, and then try and get it. And then there's, as you'll see up and down the pit lane, there's some guys who are quite athletic and some less so.
So
it's just trying to kind of get it around. But there is a place for everyone, and that's who. If you're front jack man, if you put someone quite solid in front of it, he's got bigger mass to move, so you're kind of trying.
There's an ice cream truck in the city centre where I live, and it says, on the side, it says, fat people are harder to kidnap, have a double scoop ice cream. So I guess the same might apply to the front jack man. Yeah, bigger jack men are harder to fling. But I didn't mean to divert to the pit crew, but this is really fascinating because you know these guys. There was a famous Haas mess up on the front left jack, I think, in Australia a few years back. And Haas were in a really strong position. I think that was Grosjean. And two pit stops went wrong. And there was a lot of pictures of the lad on the front jack being looking really devastated. But I guess, you know, like, you know, I'm a spanner monkey myself. If a thread wants to cross, you know, sometimes that just happens. And it must be so hard on that individual to go, oh, the whole race just messed up because of me.
Well, no, exactly. And that's it. And it was a killer. I mean, that was 2018 and literally chucked away. Yeah, I think it was definitely would have been fifth and sixth in the race, if not fourth and fifth, and that kind of thing. And if someone, you don't know, someone drops out, there's a potential for a podium there. And like, the car was good. And yeah, it just happens. But it's one of those ones where it's a lot of it is kind of a consequence of bigger things. So like, and you never put the blame on the one guy. It's like, I remember that weekend, it was, I think we'd already broken curfew that weekend, so there was no chance to do pit stop practice. And then over the winter, like the way the organization kind of fell out, and you were here, there, and everywhere. Some guys were in Italy, some guys were in Banbury. Car build was a bit slow, so again, pit stop practice were like few and far between. Yet, like when I was at Mercedes, like over the winter, they were literally doing two sets of pit stop practices a day, every day for like the winter going into it. So it's kind of, again, it just shows that kind of resource and organization and just the difference between like the kind of teams and level to kind of get to it. So yeah, I don't blame the guys doing it. It's like, and another thing as well is for the parts which cross-threaded, you're like, well, why are they cross-threading? And they bought parts again, so they're coming from Ferrari, and they're like, and it's like, and then, well, no, but it's like saying, like, literally Mercedes, I don't know if they still do, but Mercedes used to have a designer purely for pit equipment. That's it. And like, so like, so wheel nuts were about that, but wheel nuts, everything and that, just purely for the pit equipment. And like, it basically got to a point when I was there, but they went in the design and basically they made the wheel nut impossible to cross thread.
Mm.
And then it sent like years, like, and then basically it was like, they were doing so many stops on like the rigs and rigs and rigs. And like, basically it was like, right, this has to do 1,000 stops and not cross thread. If it crosses, right, we've got to redesign it.
But that's when Mercedes obviously had a huge, huge cash advantage. You know, Ross Brawn was lighting cigars with £50 notes at that time, and you can afford to do that.
No, I agree. But I mean, what I'm saying is for like, Haas's stuff came from Ferrari, and Ferrari also have this money.
Oh, right.
They have Marlboro money, don't they?
Yeah. No. So look, it's not unfair to say your time at Haas, you have experienced the midfield. So I wanted to kind of talk about, if there was somebody in our Patreon chat made a really good observation that if you're a team like Haas when you were there rather than Haas now, who seem planted to the back, dependent on Alpine to sit underneath them to save them from the 10th place spot at the moment. But do you ever look at the season and go, these are our tracks that are the ones where we've got a real chance of a proper result and a proper chance of points. Therefore, we will do our whole philosophy around street tracks or around the high speed circuits?
Yes and no. As in, you'd always kind of look at where your best opportunities were. But generally, kind of street tracks for a start are kind of, you can't design your car on street tracks. It's just, if you design your car on street tracks, you're going to struggle for a lot of the season.
Why? What's so different about the street track for setting up?
I think they're coming in a little bit more in line now, partly because there's so many of them. But if you try to design your car on Monaco, they're just so bumpy. Your steering rack's different. Your kind of suspension's different. Your ride heights are different. So your whole aero platform is just different because you're hitting 250 kilometers an hour top speed and no corners above kind of 140. And it's kind of aspects like that. You go, well, we can design it around this. Fantastic. We're going to be a lot of the places pretty poor. And obviously the big teams who kind of have a nice wide range of kind of aspects where you can pick and choose here and there. Obviously in a cost cap era, it's a little bit more difficult to do that now. I think for someone for Haas, is that your main attempt, if you're in midfield, and if you're like good midfield, so you're like that kind of fifth, sixth team, but you're not too far off the front one. All right, you're not going to win a race, but if you perform well and everything falls in, there's an outside chance of a podium here or there. Like we've seen in the past few years, I think basically pretty much every team's had a podium apart from Haas and Alfa Romeo or Sauber or Minardi or whatever. No, not Minardi. Minardi.
Look, it's not that hard. It's Sauber F... No, I've got it wrong. Stake F1 team kick Sauber. It rolls off the tongue.
Okay, Sauber. Yeah. It's that one, as like I said, like in Austria in 2018, we got fourth and fifth. And it was, there was a couple of cars who had DNFs, which allowed us to be fourth and fifth. But at the same time, we're only one car away and one further car away from a DNF and a podium. And then you look at Haas last year, in fact, and even though they had a disastrous season, Hülkenberg was effectively one lap away from getting a podium in Australia. But then obviously the red flag and everything came out.
And it kind of
went out. But again, it's that kind of case. You need to put yourself in that best position to take advantage if two Alpines take each other out or Ferrari have a engine issue or et cetera, et cetera. And then you just try and capitalize. And ultimately, you want to just be consistent over the season. If you can go out throughout the season and be picking up 7th, 8th, 9th in that midfield, then you know there's a chance for you getting potentially that little bit higher. I think the worst one is kind of if you're down running in kind of 15th, 16th, no matter what you do, you're never going to put yourself, even if you try and design for the Jordan special, which always used to be in Spa for some reason. I don't really know what they did, but they always seem to be well in there. But if you're 15th, 16th, even if you kind of designed your philosophy over one race, you'd probably still be that far out of your kind of development process and analysis that you'd still be struggled to kind of be much better for that.
You're in trouble, I guess, generally, if that's what you're pinning your hopes on. Now, I'm aware you've got a nursery run, so make sure you're not late for the little one. But I just saw a quizzical look in your eyes when I suggested that Haas might be planted to the bottom. Is there any hope for Haas? Because from the outside, it looks like that there was, some real troubles there, and it's going to take a while for the new boss to get things up and running. And he's not exactly being, he's not being shy. He's going, I don't think we're going to do that well.
Yeah, I obviously know him quite well, so it's like, and I get what he's saying, but I think he's actually doing a really good job in kind of downplaying things. If we say we're going to be last, then when we're last, then that's it. But if we're better than that, then fantastic. And looking at what they did last week, I think they've got on top of a few of their problems. Obviously, they didn't do any kind of out and out qualifying run. So if they've taken something away from their one lap pace compared to what they were last year, because I mean, even towards the end of the season, they were still getting Q3 appearances. I think in Abu Dhabi, wasn't it? They got at least one car, if not maybe two. I can't remember.
But they would drop like a stone.
The race sims they did last week looked much more in line with the rest of the field in terms of their like degradation and stuff. Again, that little bit difference in terms of you can't place them exactly, but I don't think it's going to be a 2021 season kind of thing where they were just like 30 seconds off the back of the field. I've not got them last in my kind of outlook. I've got them higher up.
And the thing is, they've got two drivers as well who like a proper hustle, who are fun to watch. I think particularly Kevin Magnussen, you know, his front, if you were to put like little gnomes on his front wing end plates, they would be terrified every single race. But he doesn't mind, does he? He really doesn't mind sticking his nose in, having a fight. We want drivers like that up there fighting for the points.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I think both drivers have got potential. They've shown they've got potential. They've got the skill to do it. I think when they get to them and kind of that point, but they need something to give them that opportunity. So like neither of them, obviously with their kind of point in their career, don't want to be driving around at the back of the field. And I think motivation, as with anyone, is a struggle for them if they're doing that. If they've got that shot of getting points and stuff, then I don't think there's two better play people to have to kind of try and give it a go and like keep it up there.
No, I don't know. The problem is they're both dads. And I think that like being a dad just saps virtual tenths out of your soul. So they've both got other things on their mind. But it is very cute when Kevin Magnussen brings his little daughter into the garage and is putting her in the cockpit. I do wish that team well in general. It seems like I get the vibe from you, certainly, that it was a nice place to work and there were good people there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's a lot of good people there. And like with any F1 team, really, it's just everyone works hard and it's always... I know someone's got to be last, but you put a lot of work in to still be last. And then you kind of see some of the things which, like, just... General F1 Twitter kind of puts on there, kind of getting into. I know you ignore it, but it just kind of feels just like these guys away from home so many weeks a year, and like no one wants to be there, and it's not the fault of any one person.
But as a pseudo pundit and as a fan, it's very difficult to just go, well, everybody's trying hard. You know, it's difficult when there's bad results.
I think it's more the air of like, like. Is what kind of the direction of like some people like blaming the strategist or something. It's like the strategist only has the car to work with. He's got the car. If the car's a second slower, it doesn't really make a difference what he does with it. He's going to try. And sometimes you've in that position, you've got to try to do something actually out of the ordinary to kind of do something. Because if you just do the same as everyone else, you'll just finish back where you were. And unfortunately, when you do something out of the ordinary, F1 being F1, 99 times out of 100, it ain't going to work. But that one time it does work, then you look like as the ex team principal is a f***ing rock star.
Oh, apologies. All the kids are at school. That's fine. That means I've got to go in and beep one thing, Mike.
Oh, sorry.
Unbelievable. No, it's been absolutely...
I was quoting.
it's been great fun having you here. And I'm really hoping this season we can get hold of you a little bit more because we always enjoy your insights. And we'll start naming these shows. We can call it From the Pratt Perch with Mike Caulfield. Who was it that named it the Pratt Perch? I can't remember.
I don't know. But
it came from somewhere.
I've used it.
Nice one. Mike Caulfield, you are still... You're private on Twitter. Unprivate your Twitter so people can follow you.
I'm not on it at the moment, really. So.
Okay, fair enough. In that case, I'll give out, as usual, your home address so that people can stalk you. Thank you very much, Mike Caulfield. We'll hear more from him in the season. The next time I speak to you, it's going to be a race review. I think we're going to be around 9 p.m. UK time on Saturday. Remember that the race is on Saturday. Until next time, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Mr. Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.